Thanks, Fran. So my guest today again is Maria Hernandez Segoviano, and she is the Advocacy Coordinator for OPAL Environmental Justice Oregon. So thanks so much for joining me today, Maria.
No, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. So we're really celebrating a little bit OPAL's really significant victory in, you know, this long-term campaign that you've had to get a low-income fair in Portland or in the metropolitan region. And so you managed to secure $12 million in low-income fair in this new transportation package that was passed about 10 days ago, I think July 7th.
Yeah, we're definitely in a celebratory mode, especially recognizing the hard work that our Bus Riders Unite have done to make this happen. And we're really proud to really make sure that that comes to be and be implemented soon.
Okay, and that low-income fare applies to, it reduces by 50% the fare for anyone making 200% or less of the national poverty line.
Correct.
Okay. But that was not, you weren't entirely pleased with this package. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah. So perhaps I can offer just a little bit of background as well in terms of the transportation package and where that money comes for the low income fare. For our analysis, you know, the transportation package has been an effort this entire last session at the in Salem. And we've been at the table, we've been having those conversations and making sure that our Bus Riders Unite and the members who we organize, their priorities were set. And so while, to your point, we are not necessarily happy with the way in which the transportation package is getting funded, especially the low-income fare, we also recognize that it's a huge investment for the state of Oregon when it comes to multimodal transportation, which includes walking, biking, and transit.
And so we're talking about $103 million a year over a 10-year period is what has been allocated to those three kind of multimodal forms of transportation that include bus, walking, and biking?
Yes, and specifically to the transit side of things, it's where that money would come to fund the low-income fare, among other things such as service enhancement program or the programs that either TriMet or other mass transit agencies have around the state of Oregon. And so along that too, there comes this ability of making sure that that money is specifically used for public transit moving forward.
Okay, so TriMet is actually going to have to go back to ODOT with a proposal about how they're going to spend their share of those funds. Is that correct? And so there's some oversight to ensure that they use those funds effectively?
Yes. And when we're talking about oversight more specifically as well, so as you know, right, OPAL organizes folks and we continuously make sure that our members are building power and are building their own leadership because we recognize that they're all leaders. And it's just a matter of owning and embracing that. So when we were advocating, when we started working with the transportation package and making sure with once Governor Kate Brown introduced this as one of her priorities, we wanted to make sure that this was something where our members were included, especially given that they're the most impacted and they're the riders of Portland's transit system. And so when we were in Portland and advocating and making sure that we were following the conversation, we also made sure that the things that they wanted to have in the transportation package, especially in the transit system or in the transit part of the package, what were going to be implemented, given that there was going to be a wage tax in terms of the funding as a funding mechanism for them. So we wanted to see some oversight and some accountability for sure.
Okay. And so that wage tax is sort of on the more regressive end of this package, and it amounts to 0.1% of the annual income of the worker.
Correct. Right.
So essentially, you know, we've got some benefits in terms of getting that low income fare, but also having low income workers pay into that fund through that.
Yeah. And for us, we sometimes see it as paying double, right? Paying double into the system. You are already a rider, you're already paying, and then you're being asked to pay a wage tax. So again, it really goes to reiterate that when we were there, we wanted to make sure that what was political feasible was also not placing bigger burdens on workers and folks who already use the system and who unfortunately have to pay double. But we again make sure that through the low income fare, that this is a way for them to also make sure that the transit system and the TriMet in this case is making sure to follow through on not placing more burden on them.
Okay, yeah. And so having that additional oversight of TriMet by ODOT to ensure that those funds are used responsibly, it is kind of critically important given some of, I want to say, Opal's other critiques of, you know, uses of TriMet funds that have not, I think, been responsive to, you know, the rider constituents' needs, including the, what is it called, the HopFast Pass electronic pass system, which has been, you know, the cost of that has been anywhere between, I've seen estimates as low as $22 million and as high as almost $40 million for an electronic pass system that really has, it sounds like, had minimal uses for low-income riders.
Yeah, and actually the low-income fare came out of that introduction of the Hot Pass when last February in 2016, when riders specifically first started looking and seeing that there was going to be this new introduction of electric Hot Pass or electric just fare charging system. We then started asking the real questions of what would that mean for low-income individuals who, one, don't have access to things such as credit cards, bank accounts, etc. And we wanted to make sure that as TriMet was implementing this new way of charging for fares, that they were taking into consideration that not everybody is able to access that electronic system. And the low-income fare came to be the campaign that came out of that to really make sure that individuals who are most impacted are able to access, are able to say what they need, and are also able to make sure that they see the implementation of that new project or that new way of charging for fares.
Okay, yeah. And I mean, I know Opal has hit really hard the links between gentrification and the need for low-income fares, that people who are low-income people, people of color, disproportionately are being forced out to the periphery of the city and are encountering more and more expenses related to transportation without the public infrastructure that's really meeting their needs.
Right. And we always know through, you know, personal experiences as well, through our members, where you live determines where what type of transportation you take. And also what type of transportation you take determines where you live. We still have really inaccessible transportation over in Gresham during south northbound that doesn't have accessible transit, and there's no weekend lines even still then. So for us, housing and transportation are intertwined and are an environmental justice issue because you can't separate one or the other. They're really at that core of intersection for folks who get to experience that.
Okay, yeah. And it's also worth noting, I think, that back in, I think, April, Mayor Wheeler seemed to be pushing really hard for a fleet of electric cars that would be powered by PGE. He had a breakfast, I think, with the Portland Business Alliance to kind of push that idea. So we're hearing a lot of focus on autonomous vehicles at a moment when a lot of people, you know, that's simply, they're simply priced out of that as a mode of transportation, which makes it that much more key that we have, you know, accessible public transportation. And is it fair to say that we have kind of two, almost a class system with respect to bus riders and light rail riders, that you know, that some communities don't have as much access even to light rail as they do to bus?
I mean, that's definitely true. I think with your question in terms of autonomous vehicles, it's really thinking about, you know, this new economy that it seems that Mayor Wheeler may be talking about, but making sure that doesn't come out of the price of workers and that doesn't come up more burdened on low-income folks, because yes, low-income folks may not have as much access to autonomous vehicles, to all of these other things. Even now, right? Like when we think of what type of vehicles we own or low-income folks own, they're not the fanciest. They're not, you can say, the most priciest. They're just a vehicle that gets you to work and where you need to go to make sure that you're able to provide for your family, that you're able to provide other things. So it's just about making sure that this new economy doesn't come out of with more prices and more burdens on low-income folks. And that's something that we definitely will track moving forward. And we'll see where the conversation continues to go.
And it sounds like you've also been really critical of Lyft and Uber as, you know, sharing economies that actually are taking away from living wage jobs of often largely immigrant, you know, new arrivals in terms of the drivers.
When you say critical, I think it's also just making sure that, you know, again, for us is thinking about labor rights. When I said earlier, housing and transportation being intertwined, you also think about labor rights mm-hmm. and who is paying for what and for what kind of system, for what kind of transportation we have. And so it's about making sure that the economy, in terms of, in this case, Lyft and Uber, is able to make sure that workers are not being pushed to the bottom of that economy, and making sure that they are able to access whatever good may come out of this economy.
Yeah, so it's really arriving at a time when you've got a union cab company that's really fighting for the rights of and living wages for immigrant drivers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are there other aspects of the transportation package that we haven't had a chance to talk about yet that you'd like to mention? I know the Amalgamated Transit Union drivers have been pretty critical of this package as well.
Yeah, we are also tracking, you know, with the transportation package, there's really there's also good things, especially for Save Rides to School. There's going to be funding for Save Rides to School to make sure that individuals, kids, are able to walk and have safe routes going to school. So there's things about the package, as mentioned earlier, that to a certain extent, we wish it would have been better in terms of funding. But also, again, I think it's a topic that is not over, especially given that it's going to come for rulemaking processes next year. And that's something that we as OPAL, we will continue to track, and we will continue to make sure that our folks' priorities are included in that okay. rulemaking conversation.
Yeah, it might be worth talking a little bit more about the impacts of fare evasion and the enforcement around fare evasion, because that's another campaign that you've been working really hard on, is to decriminalize fare evasion. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, during the legislature this year, and I mean, it's been a campaign for a couple of years now in 2015, really thinking about how do we decriminalize our transit system, because oftentimes low-income folks are often criminalized for being poor. And so our goal this session as well, given the opportunity to work with some of the senators, is to making sure that fare evasion is not something you get criminalized for. I mean, before the new bill that passed, Senate Bill 357, which deals with interfering with public transit, you would get an IPT and that would be immediately a Class A.
Class A misdemeanor.
Exactly. Yeah. And that it's similar to a DUI. So for us, it's thinking about how do we move forward? How do we make sure that folks are not being criminalized in that manner? So the bill now establishes that you would get an IPT and it will be Class C misdemeanor. But after the third sort of strike out, it will become a Class A again. Obviously, you know, we will continue to work together with our members or riders to make sure that the decriminalization continues, because folks deserve to use transit and access transit and not be criminalized for not being able to pay $2.50 or whatever amount of money is being asked, whether you're a youth or an older individual.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, people seem largely unaware of how sweeps are conducted in a way that can be very intimidating, and it's a very kind of militarized operation. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I know that you've been campaigning against, this practice of sweeps. So we're almost out of time here, and I'm just wondering, I just want to mention really quickly that Willamette Week did do an article a while back, just a couple months ago, about the prospect of Governor Brown privatizing TriMet. So that's something, undoubtedly, you'll be privatizing light rail specifically. So that's something that you'll be keeping an eye on, I have no doubt. So thank you so much. My guest today, again, has been Maria Hernandez Segoviano, and she's the advocacy coordinator for OPAL Environmental Justice Oregon. Thanks so much, Maria.
Thank you for having me.